him and curse him, probably. I'd like to see them put the same curse on him they put on Hodge. That would be poetic justice. Simon turned aside and spat into the bushes. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, his face twisted into a grimace. His blood tastes foul, like poison.
I suppose we can add that to his list of charming qualities, said Jace. I wonder what else he was up to tonight.
We need to get back to the hall. The look on Alec's face was strained, and Clary remembered that Sebastian had said something to him, something about the other Lightwoods.
Can you walk, Clary?
She drew away from Simon. I can walk. What about Hodge? We can't just leave him.
We have to, said Alec. There'll be time to come back for him if we all survive the night.
As they left the garden, Jace paused, drew off his jacket, and laid it over Hodge's slack, upturned face. Clary wanted to go to Jace, put a hand on his shoulder even, but something in the way he held himself told her not to. Even Alec didn't go near him or offer a healing rune, despite the fact that Jace was limping as he walked down the hill. They moved together down the zigzag path, weapons drawn and at the ready. The sky lit red by the burning guard behind them, but they saw no demons. The stillness and eerie light made Clary's head throb. She felt as if she were in a dream. Exhaustion gripped her like a vice. Just putting one foot in front of the other was like lifting a block of cement and slamming it down, over and over. She could hear Jace and Alec talking up ahead on the path, their voices faintly blurred despite their proximity. Alec was speaking softly, almost pleading.
Jace, the way you were talking up there, to Hodge, you can't think like that. Being Valentine's son, it doesn't make you a monster. Whatever he did to you when you were a kid, whatever he taught you, you have to see it's not your fault.
I don't want to talk about this, Alec. Not now, not ever. Don't ask me about it again.
Jace's tone was savage, and Alec fell silent. Clary could almost feel his hurt. What a night, Clary thought. A night of so much pain for everyone. She tried not to think of Hodge, of the pleading, pitiful look on his face before he died. She hadn't liked Hodge, but he hadn't deserved what Sebastian had done to him. No one did. She thought of Sebastian, of the way he'd moved, like sparks flying. She'd never seen anyone but Jace move like that. She wanted to puzzle it out. What had happened to Sebastian? How had a cousin of the Penhallows managed to go so wrong, and how had they never noticed? She'd thought he'd wanted to help her save her mother, but he'd only wanted to get the Book of the White for Valentine. Magnus had been wrong. It hadn't been because of the Lightwoods that Valentine had found out about Ragnar Fell. It had been because she'd told Sebastian. How could she have been so stupid? Appalled, she barely noticed as the path turned into an avenue leading them into the city. The streets were deserted, the houses dark, many of the witchlight street lamps smashed, their glass scattered across the cobblestones. Voices were audible, echoing as if at a distance, and the gleam of torches was visible here and there among the shadows between buildings, but...
It's awfully quiet, Alec said, looking around in surprise, and...
It doesn't stink like demons, Jace frowned. Strange.
Come on, let's get to the hall.
Though Clary was half braced for an attack, they didn't see a single demon as they moved through the streets. Not a live one, at least. Though as they passed a narrow alley, she saw a group of three or four shadow hunters gathered in a circle around something that pulsed and twitched on the ground. They were taking turns stabbing it with long, sharpened poles. With a shudder, she looked away. The Hall of Accords was lit like a bonfire, witchlight pouring out of its doors and windows. They hurried up the stairs, Clary steadying herself when she stumbled. Her dizziness was getting worse. The world seemed to be swinging around her as if she stood inside a great spinning globe. Above her, the stars were white-painted streaks across the sky.
"You should lie down," Simon said. And then, when she said nothing... Clary?
With an enormous effort, she forced herself to smile at him.
I'm all right.
Jace, standing at the entrance to the hall, looked back at her in silence.
In the harsh glare of the witchlight, the blood on his face and his swollen eye looked ugly, streaked and black. There was a dull roar inside the hall, the low murmur of hundreds of voices. To Clary it sounded like the beating of an enormous heart. The lights of the bracketed torches, coupled with the glow of witchlights carried everywhere, seared her eyes and fragmented her vision. She could see only vague shapes now, vague shapes and colors, white, gold, and then the night sky above, fading from dark to paler blue. How late was it?
I don't see them, Alec, casting anxiously around the room for his family, sounded as if he were 100 miles off or deep underwater. They should be here by now.
His voice faded as Clary's dizziness worsened. She put a hand against a nearby pillar to steady herself. A hand brushed across her back. Simon. He was saying something to Jay, sounding anxious. His voice faded into the pattern of dozens of others rising and falling around her like waves breaking.
Never seen anything like it. The demons just turned around and left, just vanished.
Sunrise, probably. They're afraid of sunrise, and it's not far off.
No, it was more than that.
You just don't want to think they'll be back the next night or the next.
Don't say that. There's no reason to say that. They'll get the wards back up.
And Valentine will just take them down again.
Maybe it's no better than we deserve. Maybe Valentine was right. Maybe allying ourselves with downworlders means we've lost the angel's blessing.
Hush, have some respect. They're tallying the dead out in Angel Square.
There they are, Alec said. Over there by the dais.
It looks like...
His voice trailed off, and then he was gone, pushing his way through the crowd. Clary squinted, trying to sharpen her vision. All she could see were blurs.
She heard Jace catch his breath, and then, without another word, he was shoving through the crowd after Alec.
Clary let go of the pillar, meaning to follow them, but stumbled. Simon caught her.
"You need to lie down, Clary," he said.
"No," she whispered. "I wanted to see what happened."
She broke off. He was staring past her after Jace, and he looked stricken. Bracing herself against the pillar, she raised herself up on her toes, struggling to see over the crowd.
There they were, the Lightwoods. Mayris with her arms around Isabel, who was sobbing, and Robert Lightwood sitting on the ground and holding something. No, someone. And Clary thought of the first time she had seen Max at the Institute, lying limp and asleep on a couch. His glasses knocked askew and his hand trailing along the floor.
"He can sleep anywhere," Jace had said.
And he almost looked as if he were sleeping now in his father's lap. But Clary knew he wasn't.
Alec was on his knees, holding one of Max's hands. But Jace was just standing where he was, not moving. And more than anything else, he looked lost, as if he had no idea where he was or what he was doing there. All Clary wanted was to run to him and put her arms around him. But the look on Simon's face told her no, no. And so did her memory of the manor house, and Jace's arms around her there. She was the last person on earth who could ever give him any comfort.
"Clary," Simon said, but she was pulling away from him despite her dizziness and the pain in her head.
She ran for the door of the hall and pushed it open, ran out onto the steps and stood there, gulping down breaths of cold air. In the distance the horizon was streaked with red fire, the stars fading, bleached out of the lightning sky. The night was over. Dawn had come.
Chapter 13. Where There Is Sorrow. Clary woke gasping out of a dream of bleeding angels, her sheets twisted around her in a tight spiral. It was pitch black and close in Amatis's spare bedroom, like being locked in a coffin. She reached out and twitched the curtains open. Daylight poured in. She frowned and pulled them shut again. Shadow hunters burned their dead, and ever since the demon attack, the sky to the west of the city had been stained with smoke. Looking at it out the window made Clary feel sick, so she kept the curtains closed. In the darkness of the room, she closed her eyes, trying to remember her dream. There had been angels in it, and the image of the rune Ethereal had showed her, flashing over and over against the inside of her eyelids like a blinking walk sign.
It was a simple rune, as simple as a tied knot, but no matter how hard she concentrated, she couldn't read it, couldn't figure out what it meant. All she knew was that it seemed somehow incomplete to her, as if whoever had created the pattern hadn't quite finished it.
"These are not the first dreams I have showed you," Ithuriel had said.
She thought of her other dreams, of Simon with crosses burned into his hands, Jace with wings, lakes of cracking ice that shone like mirror glass. Had the angel sent her those too? With a sigh, she sat up. The dreams might be bad, but the waking images that marched across her brain weren't much better. Isabel, weeping on the floor of the Hall of the Accords, tugging with such force on the black hair threaded through her fingers that Clary worried she would rip it out. Mavis shrieking at Gia Penhallow that the boy they'd brought into their house had done this, their cousin. And if he was so closely allied with Valentine, what did that say about them? Alec trying to calm his mother down, asking Jace to help him. But Jace just standing there as the sun rose over Alicante and blazed down through the ceiling of the hall.
"It's dawn," Luke had said, looking more tired than Clary had ever seen him. "Time to bring the bodies inside."
And he'd sent out patrols to gather up the dead shadow hunters and lycanthropes lying in the streets and bring them to the plaza outside the hall. The plaza Clary had crossed with Sebastian when she'd commented that the hall looked like a church. It had seemed like a pretty place to her then, lined with flower boxes and brightly painted shops, and now it was full of corpses. Including Max. Thinking of the little boy who'd so gravely talked about manga with her made her stomach knot. She'd promised once that she'd take him to Forbidden Planet, but that would never happen now. "I would have bought him books," she thought. "Whatever books he wanted." Not that it mattered. "Don't think about it." Clary kicked her sheets back and got up. After a quick shower, she'd changed into the jeans and sweater she'd worn the day she'd come from New York. She pressed her face to the material before she put the sweater on, hoping to catch a whiff of Brooklyn, or the smell of laundry detergent, something to remind her of home. But it had been washed and smelled like lemon soap. With another sigh, she headed downstairs. The house was empty except for Simon, sitting on the couch in the living room. The open windows behind him streamed daylight. He'd become like a cat, Clary thought, always seeking out available patches of sunlight to curl up in. No matter how much sun he got, though, his skin stayed the same ivory white. She picked an apple out of the bowl on the table and sank down next to him, curling her legs up under her. "Did you get any sleep?"
"Some." He looked at her. "I ought to ask you that. You're the one with the shadows under your eyes. More nightmares?"
She shrugged. "Same stuff. Death, destruction, bad angels."
"So a lot like real life, then."
"Yeah, but at least when I wake up, it's over." She took a bite out of her apple. "Let me guess. Luke and Amatis are at the Accords Hall having another meeting."
"Yeah. I think they're having the meeting where they get together and decide what other meetings they need to have."
Simon picked idly at the fringe, edging a throw pillow.
"Have you heard anything from Magnus?"
"No." Clary was trying not to think about the fact that it had been 3 days since she'd seen Magnus, and he'd sent no word at all. Or the fact that there was really nothing stopping him from taking the Book of the White and disappearing into the ether, never to be heard from again. She wondered why she'd ever thought trusting someone who wore that much eyeliner was a good idea. She touched Simon's wrist lightly. "And you? What about you? You're still okay here?" She'd wanted Simon to go home the moment the battle was over. Home, where it was safe. But he'd been strangely resistant. For whatever reason, he seemed to want to stay. She hoped it wasn't because he thought he had to take care of her. She'd nearly come out and told him she didn't need his protection, but she hadn't, because part of her couldn't bear to see him go. So he stayed, and Clary was secretly, guiltily glad. "You're getting, you know, what you need?"
"You mean blood?" "Yeah, Maya's still bringing me bottles every day. Don't ask me where she gets it, though."
The first morning Simon had been at Amatis's house, a grinning lycanthrope had showed up on the doorstep with a live cat for him.
"Blood," he'd said, in a heavily accented voice. "For you. Fresh."
Simon had thanked the werewolf, waited for him to leave, and let the cat go, his expression faintly green.
"Well, you're going to have to get your blood from somewhere," said Luke, looking amused.
"I have a pet cat," Simon replied. "There's no way."
"I'll tell Maya," Luke promised.
And from then on, the blood had come in discreet glass milk bottles. Clary had no idea how Maya was arranging it and, like Simon, didn't want to ask. She hadn't seen the werewolf girl since the night of the battle. The lycanthropes were camped somewhere in the nearby forest, with only Luke remaining in the city.
"What's up?"
Simon leaned his head back, looking at her through his lowered eyelashes.
"You look like you want to ask me something."
There were several things Clary wanted to ask him, but she decided to go for one of the safer options. "Hodge," she said and hesitated, "when you were in the cell, you really didn't know it was him?"
"I couldn't see him. I could just hear him through the wall. We talked a lot."
"And you liked him? I mean, he was nice?"
"Nice? I don't know. Tortured, sad, intelligent. Compassionate in brief flashes. Yeah, I liked him. I think I sort of reminded him of himself in a way."
"Don't say that." Clary sat up straight, almost dropping her apple. "You're nothing like Hodge was."
"You don't think I'm tortured and intelligent?"
"Hodge was evil. You're not." Clary spoke decidedly. "That's all there is to it." Simon sighed.
"People aren't born good or bad. Maybe they're born with tendencies either way, but it's the way you live your life that matters. And the people you know. Valentine was Hodge's friend. And I don't think Hodge really had anyone else in his life to challenge him or make him be a better person. If I'd had that life, I don't know how I would have turned out. But I didn't. I have my family, and I have you."
Clary smiled at him, but his words rang painfully in her ears. People aren't born good or bad. She'd always thought that was true. But in the images the angel had showed her, she'd seen her mother call her own child evil, a monster. She wished she could tell Simon about it, tell him everything the angel had showed her, but she couldn't. It would have meant telling what they'd discovered about Jace, and that she couldn't do. It was his secret to tell, not hers. Simon had asked her once what Jace had meant when he'd spoken to Hodge, why he'd called himself a monster, but she'd only answered that it was hard to understand what Jace meant by anything at the best of times. She wasn't sure Simon had believed her, but he hadn't asked again. She was saved from saying anything at all by a loud knock on the door. With a frown, Clary set her apple core down on the table. "I'll get it." The open door let in a wave of cold, fresh air. Aline Penhallow stood on the front steps, wearing a dark pink silk jacket that almost matched the circles under her eyes. "I need to talk to you," she said without preamble. Surprised, Clary could only nod and hold the door open. "All right. Come on in." "Thanks." Aline pushed past her brusquely and went into the living room. She froze when she saw Simon sitting on the couch, her lips parting in astonishment.
"Isn't that... the vampire?" Simon grinned.
The slight but inhuman acuity of his incisors was just visible against his lower lip when he grinned like that. Clary wished he wouldn't. Aline turned to Clary. "Can I talk to you alone?" "No," Clary said, and sat down on the couch next to Simon. "Anything you have to say, you can say to both of us." Aline bit her lip. "Fine. Look, I have something I want to tell Alec and Jason Isabel, but I have no idea where to find them right now." Clary sighed. They pulled some strings and got into an empty house. The family in it left for the country. Aline nodded. A lot of people had left Idris since the attacks. Most had stayed, more than Clary would have expected, but quite a few had packed up and departed, leaving their houses standing empty. "They're okay, if that's what you want to know. Look, I haven't seen them either, not since the battle. I could pass on a message through Luke if you want." "I don't know." Aline was chewing her lower lip. "My parents had to tell Sebastian's aunt in Paris what he did. She was really upset."
"As one would be if one's nephew turned out to be an evil mastermind," said Simon.
Aline shot him a dark look. She said it was completely unlike him, that there must be some mistake.
so she sent me some photos of him.
Aline reached into her pocket and drew out several slightly bent photographs, which she handed to Clary.
Look.
Clary looked. The photographs showed a laughing, dark-haired boy, handsome in an off-kilter sort of way, with a crooked grin and a slightly too big nose. He looked like the sort of boy it would be fun to hang out with. He also looked nothing at all like Sebastian.
This is your cousin?
That's Sebastian Verloc, which means that the boy who was here, who was calling himself Sebastian, is someone else entirely.
Clary rifled through the photos with increasing agitation.
I thought... Aline was worrying her lip again. I thought that if the Lightwoods knew Sebastian, or whoever that boy was, wasn't really our cousin, maybe they'd forgive me. Forgive us.
I'm sure they will.
Clary made her voice as kind as she could. But this is bigger than that. The Clave will want to know that Sebastian wasn't just some misguided shadow hunter kid. Valentine sent him here deliberately as a spy.
He was just so convincing, Aline said. He knew things only my family knows. He knew things from our childhood.
It kind of makes you wonder, said Simon. What happened to the real Sebastian, your cousin? It sounds like he left Paris headed to Idris and never actually got here. So what happened to him on the way?
Clary answered, Valentine happened. He must have planned it all and known where Sebastian would be and how to intercept him on the way. And if he did that with Sebastian, then there may be others, said Aline. You should tell the Clave. Tell Lucian Greymark.
She caught Clary's surprised look. People listen to him. My parents said so.
Maybe you should come to the hall with us, Simon suggested. Tell him yourself.
Aline shook her head. I can't face the Lightwoods, especially Isabel. She saved my life and I just ran away. I couldn't stop myself. I just ran.
You were in shock. It's not your fault.
Aline looked unconvinced. And now her brother. She broke off, biting her lip again. Anyway, look, there's something I've been meaning to tell you, Clary.
To tell me?
Clary was baffled.
Yes.
Aline took a deep breath.
Look, what you walked in on, with me and Jace, it wasn't anything. I kissed him. It was an experiment, and it didn't really work.
Clary felt herself blushing what she thought must be a truly spectacular red.
Why is she telling me this?
Look, it's okay. It's Jace's business, not mine.
Well, you seem pretty upset at the time.
A small smile played around the corners of Aline's mouth.
And I think I know why.
Clary swallowed against the acid taste in her mouth.
You do?
Look, your brother gets around. Everyone knows that. He's dated lots of girls. You were worried that if he messed around with me, he'd get in trouble. After all, our families were friends. You don't need to worry, though. He's not my type.
I don't think I've ever heard a girl say that before, said Simon. I thought Jace was the kind of guy who was everyone's type.
I thought so, too, Aline said slowly, which is why I kissed him. I was trying to figure out if any guy is my type.
She kissed Jace, Clary thought. He didn't kiss her. She kissed him.
She met Simon's eyes over Aline's head. Simon was looking amused.
Well, what'd you decide?
Aline shrugged.
Not sure yet. But hey, at least you don't have Jace to worry about.
If only.
I always have Jace to worry about.
The space inside the Hall of Accords had been swiftly reconfigured since the night of the battle. With the guard gone, it now served as a council chamber, a gathering place for people looking for missing family members, and a place to learn the latest news. The central fountain was dry, and on either side of it long benches were drawn up in rows facing a raised dais at the far end of the room. While some Nephilim were seated on the benches in what looked like a council session, in the aisles and beneath the arcades that ringed the great room, dozens of other shadow hunters were milling anxiously. The hall no longer looked like a place where anyone would consider dancing. There was a peculiar atmosphere in the air, a mixture of tension and anticipation. Despite the gathering of the Clave in the center, murmured conversations were everywhere.
Clary caught snippets of chatter as she and Simon moved through the room. The demon towers were working again. The wards were back up, but weaker than before. The wards were back up, but stronger than before. Demons had been sighted on the hills south of the city. The country houses were abandoned. More families had left the city, and some had left the clave altogether. On the raised dais, surrounded by hanging maps of the city, stood the consul, glowering like a bodyguard, beside a short, plump man in gray. The plump man was gesticulating angrily as he spoke, but no one seemed to be paying any attention.
"Oh, crap. That's the Inquisitor," Simon muttered in Clary's ear, pointing. "Aldertree."
"And there's Luke," Clary said, picking him out from the crowd. He stood near the dry fountain, deep in conversation with a man in heavily scuffed gear and a bandage covering the left half of his face. Clary looked around for Amatis and finally saw her sitting silently at the end of a bench, as far away from the other shadow hunters as she could get. She caught sight of Clary and made a startled face, beginning to rise to her feet. Luke saw Clary and frowned, and spoke to the bandaged man in a low voice, excusing himself. He crossed the room to where Clary and Simon stood by one of the pillars, his frown deepening as he approached.
"What are you doing here? You know the clave doesn't allow children into its meetings, and as for you," he glared at Simon, "it's probably not the best idea for you to show your face in front of the Inquisitor, even if there isn't really anything he can do about it."
A smile twitched the corner of his mouth.
"Not without jeopardizing any alliance the clave might want to have with downworlders in the future, anyway."
"That's right."
Simon wiggled his fingers in a wave at the Inquisitor, which Aldertree ignored. "Simon, stop it. We're here for a reason." Clary thrust the photographs of Sebastian at Luke. "This is Sebastian Verloc." "The real Sebastian Verloc?" Luke's expression darkened. He shuffled through the photos without saying anything as Clary repeated the story Aline had told her. Simon, meanwhile, stood uneasily, glowering across the room at Aldertree, who was studiously ignoring him.
"So does the real Sebastian look much like the imposter version?" Luke asked finally.
"Not really," Clary said. "The fake Sebastian was taller, and I think he was probably blonde because he was definitely dyeing his hair. No one has hair that black. And the dye came off on my fingers when I touched it," she thought, but kept the thought to herself. "Anyway, Aline wanted us to show these to you and to the Lightwoods. She thought maybe if they knew he wasn't really related to the Penhallows, then..."
"She hasn't told her parents about these, has she?"
Luke indicated the photos.
"Not yet, I think," Clary said. "I think she came straight to me. She wanted me to tell you. She said people listen to you."
"Maybe some of them do."
Luke glanced back at the man with the bandaged face.
"I was just talking to Patrick Penhallow, actually. Valentine was a good friend of his back in the day and may have kept tabs on the Penhallow family in one way or another in the years since. You said Hodge told you he had spies here."
He handed the photos back to Clary.
"Unfortunately, the Lightwoods aren't going to be part of the council today. This morning was Max's funeral. They're most likely in the cemetery."
Seeing the look on Clary's face, he added,
"It was a very small ceremony, Clary. Just the family."
"But I am Jace's family," said a small, protesting voice inside her head. But there was another voice, a louder one, surprising her with its bitterness. "And he told you that being around you was like bleeding to death slowly. Do you really think he needs that when he's already at Max's funeral?"
"Then you can tell them tonight, maybe," Clary said. "I mean, I think it'll be good news. Whoever Sebastian really is, he isn't related to their friends."
"It'd be better news if we knew where he was," Luke muttered. "Or what other spies Valentine has here. There must have been several of them, at least, involved in taking down the wards. It could only have been done from inside the city."
"Hodge said Valentine had figured out how to do it," said Simon. "He said that you need demon blood to take the wards down, but that there was no way to get demon blood into the city. Except that Valentine had figured out a way. Someone painted a rune in demon blood on the apex of one of the towers," Luke said with a sigh. "So, clearly, Hodge was right. Unfortunately,
The Clave has always trusted too much in their wards. But even the cleverest puzzle has a solution.
It seems to me like the sort of clever that gets your butt kicked in gaming, Simon said. The second you protect your fortress with a spell of total invincibility, someone comes along and figures out how to trash the place.
Simon, Clary said, shut up.
He's not so far off, said Luke. We just don't know how they got demon blood into the city without setting the wards off in the first place. He shrugged. It's the least of our problems at the moment. The wards are back up, but we already know they're not foolproof. Valentine could return at any moment with an even bigger force of arms, and I doubt we could fight him off. There aren't enough Nephilim, and those who are here are utterly demoralized.
But what about the Downworlders? Clary said. You told the Consul that the Clave had to fight with the Downworlders.
I can tell Malachi and Aldertree that until I'm blue in the face, but it doesn't mean they'll listen, Luke said warily. The only reason they're even letting me stay here is because the Clave voted to keep me on as an advisor. And they only did that because quite a few of them had their lives saved by my pack. But that doesn't mean they want more Downworlders in Idris.
Someone screamed. Amatis was on her feet, her hand over her mouth, staring toward the front of the hall. A man stood in the doorway, framed in the glow of the sunlight outside. He was only a silhouette until he took a step forward. Into the hall, and Clary could see his face for the first time. Valentine. For some reason, the first thing Clary noticed was that he was clean-shaven. It made him look younger, more like the angry boy in the memories Ethereal had showed her. Instead of battle dress, he wore an elegantly cut pinstripe suit and a tie. He was unarmed. He could have been any man walking down the streets of Manhattan. He could have been anyone's father. He didn't look toward Clary, didn't acknowledge her presence at all. His eyes were on Luke as he walked up the narrow aisle between the benches.
How could he come in here like this without any weapons? Clary wondered,
and had her question answered a moment later. Inquisitor Aldertree made a noise like a wounded bear, tore himself away from Malachi, who was trying to hold him back, staggered down the dais steps and hurled himself at Valentine. He passed through Valentine's body like a knife tearing through paper. Valentine turned to watch Aldertree with an expression of bland interest as the Inquisitor staggered, collided with a pillar, and sprawled awkwardly to the ground. The Consul, following, bent to help him to his feet. There was a look of barely concealed disgust on his face as he did it, and Clary wondered if the disgust was directed at Valentine or at Aldertree for acting such a fool. Another faint murmur carried around the room. The Inquisitor squeaked and struggled like a rat in a trap, Malachi holding him firmly by the arms as Valentine proceeded into the room without another glance at either of them. The Shadow Hunters, who had been clustered around the benches, drew back, like the waves of the Red Sea parting for Moses, leaving a clear path down the center of the room. Clary shivered as he drew closer to where she stood with Luke and Simon. He's only a projection, she told herself. Not really here. He can't hurt you. Beside her, Simon shuddered. Clary took his hand just as Valentine paused at the steps of the dais and turned to look directly at her. His eyes raked her once, casually, as if taking her measure, passed over Simon entirely, and came to rest on Luke.
Lucian, he said.
Luke returned his gaze, steady and level, saying nothing. It was the first time they had been together in the same room since Renwick's, Clary thought. And then Luke had been half-dead from fighting and covered in blood. It was easier now to mark both the differences and the similarities between the two men. Luke in his ragged flannel and jeans, and Valentine in his beautiful and expensive-looking suit. Luke, with a day's worth of stubble and gray in his hair, and Valentine looking much as he had when he was 25, only colder somehow, and harder, as if the passing years were in the process of turning him slowly to stone.
"I hear the Clave has brought you onto the Council now," Valentine said. "It would only be fitting for a Clave diluted by corruption and pandering to find itself infiltrated by half-breed degenerates."
His voice was placid, even cheerful.
so much so that it was hard to feel the poison in his words, or to really believe that he meant them. His gaze moved back to Clary.
"Clarissa," he said. "Here with the vampire, I see. When things have settled a bit, we really must discuss your choice of pets."
A low growling came from Simon's throat. Clary gripped his hand hard, hard enough that there would have been a time he'd have jerked away in pain. Now he didn't seem to feel it.
"Don't," she whispered. "Just don't."
Valentine had already turned his attention away from them. He climbed the dais steps and turned to gaze down at the crowd.
"So many familiar faces," he observed. "Patrick, Malachi, Amatis."
Amatis stood rigid, her eyes bright with hatred. The Inquisitor was still struggling in Malachi's grasp. Valentine's gaze flicked over him, half amused.
"Even you, Aldertree. I hear you are indirectly responsible for the death of my old friend Hodge Starkweather. A pity that."
Luke found his voice.
"You admit it, then," he said. "You brought the wards down. You sent the demons."
"I sent them," said Valentine. "I can send more."
"Surely the Clave, even the Clave, stupid as they are, must have expected this."
"You expected it, didn't you, Lucian?"
Luke's eyes were gravely blue.
"I did. But I know you, Valentine. So have you come to bargain or to gloat?"
"Neither." Valentine regarded the silent crowd. "I have no need to bargain," he said.
And though his tone was calm, his voice carried as if amplified.
"And no desire to gloat. I don't enjoy causing the deaths of shadow hunters. There are precious few of us already, in a world that needs us desperately. But that's how the Clave likes it, isn't it? It's just another one of their nonsensical rules. The rules they use to grind ordinary shadow hunters into the dust. I did what I did because I had to. I did what I did because it was the only way to make the Clave listen. Shadow hunters didn't die because of me. They died because the Clave ignored me."
He met Aldertree's eyes across the crowd. The Inquisitor's face was white and twitching. "So many of you here were in my circle," said Valentine slowly. "I speak to you now, and to those who knew of the circle but stood outside it. Do you remember what I predicted 15 years ago? That unless we acted against the Accords, the city of Alicante, our own precious capital, would be overrun by slobbering, slavering crowds of half-breeds, the degenerate races trampling underfoot everything we hold dear? And just as I predicted, all that has come to pass. The guard burned to the ground, the portal destroyed, our streets awash with monsters. Half-human scum presuming to lead us. So, my friends, my enemies, my brothers under the angel, I ask you, do you believe me now?" His voice rose to a shout. "Do you believe me now?" His gaze swept the room as if he expected an answer. There was none, only a sea of staring faces.
"Valentine."
Luke's voice, though soft, broke the silence.
"Can't you see what you've done? The Accords you dreaded so much didn't make Downworlders equal to Nephilim. They didn't assure half-humans a spot on the Council. All the old hatreds were still in place. You should have trusted to those, but you didn't. You couldn't. And now you've given us the one thing that could possibly have united us all." His eyes sought Valentine's. "A common enemy."
A flush passed over Valentine's pale face.
"I am not an enemy. Not of Nephilim. You are that. You're the one trying to entice them into a hopeless fight. You think those demons you saw are all I have? They were a fraction of what I can summon." "There are more of us as well," said Luke. "More Nephilim, and more Downworlders."
"Downworlders," Valentine sneered. "They will run at the first sign of true danger. Nephilim are born to be warriors, to protect this world, but the world hates your kind. There is a reason clean silver burns you and daylight scorches the night children."
"It doesn't scorch me," Simon said in a hard, clear voice, despite the grip of Clary's hand. "Here I am, standing in sunlight."
but Valentine just laughed.
I've seen you choke on the name of God, vampire, he said. And as for why you can stand in the sunlight...
He broke off and grinned.
You're an anomaly, perhaps. A freak. But still a monster.
A monster. Clary thought of Valentine on the ship, of what he had said there. Your mother told me that I had turned her first child into a monster. She left me before I could have had the chance to do the same to her second. Jace. The thought of his name was a sharp pain. After what Valentine did, he stands here talking about monsters.
The only monster here, she said, despite herself and despite her resolution to keep silent, is you.
I saw Ethereal, she went on when he turned to look at her in surprise. I know everything.
I doubt that, Valentine said. If you did, you'd keep your mouth shut, for your brother's sake, if not your own.
Don't you even talk about Jace to me, Clary wanted to shout.
But another voice came to cut hers off, a cool, unexpected female voice, fearless and bitter.
And what about my brother?
Amatis moved to stand at the foot of the dais, looking up at Valentine. Luke started in surprise and shook his head at her, but she ignored him.
Valentine frowned. What about Lucian?
Amatis's question, Clary sensed, had unsettled him. Or maybe it was just that Amatis was there, asking, confronting him. He had written her off years ago as weak, unlikely to challenge him. Valentine never liked it when people surprised him.
You told me he wasn't my brother anymore, said Amatis. You took Stephen away from me. You destroyed my family. You say you aren't an enemy of Nephilim, but you set each of us against each other, family after family, wrecking lives without compunction. You say you hate the Clave, but you're the one who made them what they are now, petty and paranoid. We used to trust one another, we Nephilim. You changed that. I will never forgive you for that. Her voice shook. Or for making me treat Lucian as if he were no longer my brother. I won't forgive you for that either. Nor will I forgive myself for listening to you.
Amatis.
Luke took a step forward, but his sister put up a hand to stop him. Her eyes were shining with tears, but her back was straight, her voice firm and unwavering.
There was a time we were all willing to listen to you, Valentine, she said.
And we all have that on our conscience, but no more, no more. That time is over. Is there anyone here who disagrees with me?
Clary jerked her head up and looked out at the gathered shadow hunters. They looked to her like a rough sketch of a crowd, with white blurs for faces. She saw Patrick Penhallow, his jaw set, and the Inquisitor who was shaking like a frail tree in a high wind. And Malachi, whose dark, polished face was strangely unreadable.
No one said a word. If Clary had expected Valentine to be angry at this lack of response from the Nephilim he had hoped to lead, she was disappointed. Other than a twitch in the muscle of his jaw, he was expressionless, as if he had expected this response, as if he had planned for it.
Very well, he said. If you will not listen to reason, you will have to listen to force. I have already showed you I can take down the wards around your city.
I see that you've put them back up,
but that's of no consequence. I can easily do it again. You will either accede to my requirements or face every demon the mortal sword can summon. I will tell them not to spare a single one of you, not a man, woman, or child. It's your choice.
A murmur swept around the room. Luke was staring.
You would deliberately destroy your own kind, Valentine?
Sometimes diseased plants must be culled to preserve the whole garden, said Valentine. And if all are diseased...
He turned to face the horrified crowd.
It is your choice, he went on. I have the mortal cup. If I must, I will start over with a new world of shadow hunters, created and taught by me. But I can give you this one chance. If the Clave will sign over all the powers of the Council to me and accept my unequivocal sovereignty and rule, I will stay my hand. All Shadow Hunters will swear an oath of obedience and accept a permanent loyalty rune that binds them to me. These are my terms.
There was silence. Amatis had her hand over her mouth. The rest of the room swung before Clary's eyes in a whirling blur.
They can't give in to him, she thought. They can't. But what choice did they have? What choice did any of them ever have? They're trapped by Valentine, she thought dully. As surely as Jace and I are trapped by what he made us. We are all chained to him by our own blood. It was only a moment, though it felt like an hour to Clary, before a thin voice cut through the silence, the high, spidery voice of the Inquisitor.
Sovereignty and rule? He shrieked. Your rule?
Aldertree. The Consul moved to restrain him, but the Inquisitor was too quick. He wriggled free and darted toward the dais. He was yelping something, the same words over and over as if he'd lost his mind entirely. His eyes rolled back practically to the whites. He thrust Amatus aside, staggering up the steps of the dais to face Valentine.
I am the Inquisitor, do you understand? The Inquisitor! He shouted. I am part of the Clave, the Council. I make the rules, not you. I rule, not you. I won't let you do this, you upstart, demon-loving slime.
With a look very close to boredom, Valentine reached out a hand, almost as if he meant to touch the Inquisitor on the shoulder. But Valentine couldn't touch anything. He was just a projection. And then Clary gasped as Valentine's hand passed through the Inquisitor's skin, bones and flesh vanishing into his ribcage. There was a second, only a second, during which the whole hall seemed to gape at Valentine's left arm, buried somehow, impossibly, wrist-deep in Aldertree's chest. Then Valentine jerked his wrist hard and suddenly to the left, a twisting motion, as if he were turning a stubbornly rusty doorknob. The Inquisitor gave a single cry and dropped like a stone. Valentine drew his hand back. It was slicked with blood, a scarlet glove reaching halfway to his elbow, staining the expensive wool of his suit. Lowering his bloody hand, he gazed out across the horrified crowd, his eyes coming to rest at last on Luke. He spoke slowly. I will give you until tomorrow at midnight to consider my terms. At that time I will bring my army, in all its force, to Broslyn Plain. If I have not yet received a message of surrender from the Clave, I will march with my army here to Alicante, and this time we will leave nothing living. You have that long to consider my terms. Use the time wisely. And with that, he vanished. Chapter 14. In the Dark Forest.
Well, how about that? Said Jace, still without looking at Clary.
He hadn't really looked at her since she and Simon had arrived on the front step of the house the Lightwoods were now inhabiting. Instead, he was leaning against one of the high windows in the living room, staring out toward the rapidly darkening sky.
A guy attends the funeral of his 9-year-old brother and misses all the fun.
Jace, Alec said in a tired sort of voice. Don't. Alec was slumped in one of the worn, overstuffed chairs that were the only things to sit on in the room. The house had the odd, alien feel of houses belonging to strangers. It was decorated in floral-printed fabrics, frilly and pastel, and everything in it was slightly worn or tattered. There was a glass bowl filled with chocolates on the small end table near Alec. Clary, starving, had eaten a few and found them crumbly and dry. She wondered what kind of people had lived here.
The kind who ran away when things got tough, she thought sourly.
They deserved to have their house taken over.
Don't what? Jace asked.
It was dark enough outside now that Clary could see his face reflected in the window glass. His eyes looked black. He was wearing Shadow Hunter mourning clothes. They didn't wear black to funerals, since black was the color of gear in fighting. The color of death was white, and the white jacket Jace wore had scarlet runes woven into the material around the collar and wrists. Unlike battle runes, which were all about aggression and protection, these spoke a gentler language of healing and grief. There were bands of hammered metal around his wrists, too, with similar runes on them. Alec was dressed the same way, all in white with the same red-gold runes traced over the material. It made his hair look very black. Jace, Clary thought, on the other hand, all in white, looked like an angel, albeit one of the avenging kind.
You're not mad at Clary, or Simon, Alec said. At least, he added with a faint, worried frown, I don't think you're mad at Simon.
Clary half expected Jace to snap an angry retort, but all he said was,
"Clary knows I'm not angry at her."
Simon, leaning his elbows on the back of the sofa, rolled his eyes and said,
"What I don't get is how Valentine managed to kill the Inquisitor. I thought projections couldn't actually affect anything."
"They shouldn't be able to," said Alec. "They're just illusions. So much colored air, so to speak." "Well, not in this case. He reached into the Inquisitor and he twisted," Clary shuddered. "There was a lot of blood."
"Like a special bonus for you," Jay said to Simon. Simon ignored this. "Has there ever been an Inquisitor who didn't die a horrible death?" he wondered aloud. "It's like being the drummer in Spinal Tap."
Alec rubbed a hand across his face.
"I can't believe my parents don't know about this yet," he said. "I can't say I'm looking forward to telling them."
"Where are your parents?" asked Clary. "I thought they were upstairs." Alec shook his head.
"They're still at the necropolis, at Max's grave. They sent us back. They wanted to be there alone for a while." "What about Isabel?" Simon asked. "Where is she?"
The humor, such as it was, left Jace's expression.
"She won't come out of her room," he said. "She thinks what happened to Max was her fault. She wouldn't even come to the funeral." "Have you tried talking to her?"
"No," Jace said.
"We've been punching her repeatedly in the face instead." "Why, do you think that won't work?" "Just thought I'd ask." Simon's tone was mild.
"We'll tell her the stuff about Sebastian not actually being Sebastian," said Alec. "It might make her feel better. She thinks she ought to have been able to tell that there was something off about Sebastian. But if he was a spy..." Alec shrugged.
"Nobody noticed anything off about him. Not even the Penhallows." "I thought he was a knob," Jace pointed out.
"Yes, but that's just because..." Alec sank deeper into his chair. He looked exhausted, his skin a pale gray color against the stark white of his clothes. "It hardly matters. Once she finds out what Valentine's threatening, nothing's going to cheer her up."
"But would he really do it?" Clary asked. "Send a demon army against Nephilim? I mean, he's still a shadow hunter, isn't he? He couldn't destroy all his own people."
"He didn't care enough about his children not to destroy them," Jay said, meeting her eyes across the room, their gazes held. "What makes you think he'd care about his people?"
Alec looked from one of them to the other, and Clary could tell from his expression that Jace hadn't told him about Ethereal yet. He looked baffled and very sad.
"Jace." "This does explain one thing," Jay said without looking at Alec. "Magnus was trying to see if he could use a tracking rune on any of the things Sebastian had left in his room, to see if we could locate him that way. He said he wasn't getting much of a reading on anything we gave him, just flat."
"What does that mean?"
"They were Sebastian Verloc's things.
The fake Sebastian probably took them whenever he intercepted him, and Magnus isn't getting anything from them because the real Sebastian
is probably dead," finished Alec. "And the Sebastian we know is too smart to leave anything behind that could be used to track him. I mean, you can't track somebody from just anything. It has to be an object that's in some way very connected to that person. A family heirloom, or a stele, or a brush with some hair in it, something like that."
"Which is too bad," said Jace. "Because if we could follow him, he'd probably lead us straight to Valentine. I'm sure he scuttled right back to his master with a full report. Probably told him all about Hodge's crackpot mirror lake theory."
"It might not have been crackpot," Alec said.
"They've stationed guards at the pass that go to the lake and set up wards that will warn them if anyone portals there."
"Fantastic. I'm sure we all feel very safe now."
Jace leaned back against the wall.
"What I don't get," Simon said, "is why Sebastian stayed around. After what he did to Izzy and Max, he was going to get caught. There was no more pretending. I mean, even if he thought he'd killed Izzy instead of just knocking her out, how was he going to explain that they were both dead and he was still fine?
No, he was busted.
So why hang around through the fighting? Why come up to the guard to get me? I'm pretty sure he didn't actually care one way or the other whether I lived or died."
Now you're being too hard on him, Jace said. I'm sure he'd rather you died.
Actually, Clary said, I think he stayed because of me.
Jace's gaze flicked up to hers with a flash of gold.
Because of you? Hoping for another hot date, was he?
Clary felt herself flush.
No, and our date wasn't hot. In fact, it wasn't even a date.
Anyway, that's not the point. When he came into the hall, he kept trying to get me to go outside with him so we could talk. He wanted something from me. I just don't know what.
Or maybe he just wanted you, Jace said.
Seeing Clary's expression, he added, Not that way. I mean, maybe he wanted to bring you to Valentine.
Valentine doesn't care about me, Clary said. He's only ever cared about you.
Something flickered in the depths of Jace's eyes.
Is that what you call it?
His expression was frighteningly bleak.
After what happened on the boat, he's interested in you, which means you need to be careful, very careful.
In fact, it wouldn't hurt if you just spent the next few days inside. You can lock yourself in your room like Isabel.
I'm not going to do that.
Of course you're not, said Jace, because you live to torture me, don't you?
Not everything, Jace, is about you, Clary said furiously.
Possibly, Jace said, but you have to admit that the majority of things are.
Clary resisted the urge to scream. Simon cleared his throat.
Speaking of Isabel, which we only sort of were, but I thought I ought to mention this before the arguing really got underway. I think maybe I should go talk to her.
You?
Alex said, and then, looking faintly embarrassed by his own discomfiture, added quickly. It's just, she won't even come out of her room for her own family. Why would she come out for you?
Maybe because I'm not family, Simon said.
He was standing with his hands in his pockets, his shoulders back. Earlier, when Clary had been sitting close to him, she had seen that there was still a thin white line circling his neck where Valentine had cut his throat, and scars on his wrists where those had been cut too. His encounters with the Shadow Hunter's world had changed him, and not just the surface of him, or even his blood. The change went deeper than that. He stood straight, with his head up, and took whatever Jason Alec threw at him and didn't seem to care. The Simon who would have been frightened of them or made uneasy by them was gone. She felt a sudden pain in her heart and realized with a jolt what it was. She was missing him, missing Simon, Simon as he had been.
I think I'll have a try at getting Isabel to talk to me, said Simon. It can't hurt.
But it's almost dark, Clary said. We told Luke and Amatis we'd be back before the sun went down.
I'll walk you back, Jace said. As for Simon, he can manage his own way back in the dark, can't you, Simon?
Of course he can, Alex said indignantly, as if eager to make up for his earlier slighting of Simon. He's a vampire, and he added,
I just now realized you were probably joking. Never mind me.
Simon smiled. Clary opened her mouth to protest again and closed it, partly because she was, she knew, being unreasonable, and partly because there was a look on Jace's face as he gazed past her, at Simon, a look that startled her into silence. It was amusement, Clary thought, mixed with gratitude and maybe even, most surprising of all, a little bit of respect. It was a short walk between the Lightwoods' new house and Amatis's. Clary wished it were longer. She couldn't shake the feeling that every moment she spent with Jace was somehow precious and limited, that they were closing in on some half-invisible deadline that would separate them forever. She looked sideways at him. He was staring straight ahead, almost as if she weren't there. The line of his profile was sharp and clear-edged in the witchlight that illuminated the streets. His hair curled against his cheek, not quite hiding the white scar on one temple where a mark had been. She could see a line of metal glittering at his throat, where the Morgenstern ring dangled on its chain. His left hand was bare. His knuckles looked raw. So he really was healing like a mundane, as Alec had asked him to. She shivered. Jace glanced at her.
Are you cold?
I was just thinking, she said. I'm surprised that Valentine went after the Inquisitor instead of Luke. The Inquisitor's a shadow hunter, and Luke's a downworlder. Plus, Valentine hates him.
But in a way, he respects him, even if he is a downworlder, Jace said. And Clary thought of the look Jace had given Simon earlier, and then tried not to think of it.